So we need to move cars if we're double parked out there. Our second speaker is Scott A. from Atlanta.
My name's Scott. I'm an addict. Hey, everybody. It feels a little strange returning to the hills of Tennessee. I spent all of my life trying to get out of them. But I got clean here in, well, up the road a piece in Morristown, Tennessee in 1974. And there was no NA. As a matter of fact, there were less than 1,000 NA members in the world when I got clean. And when I was sitting in that room last night, or when I'm sitting in a room filled with NA members, I reflect upon the miracle that God has brought to us as this fellowship has grown and the good things that have happened. By God's grace, and only by God's grace, I have never lost that sense of, wow, I'm clean. You know? The miracle of me being clean. You know, every morning when I wake up, I'm conscious of the fact that this day, by God's grace, I don't have to use. And that's a miracle, because I spent a good part of my life, like every other dope fiend I know, using and finding ways and means to get more. I came to recovery through a miracle. I almost killed myself in an automobile accident. And I ended up in a hospital in Morristown. And the physician who treated me was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And after I got out of the hospital, as a result of the accident, I had to go get new glasses. And I went to be examined at an optometrist, and he said, there's a problem here, and you need to go see an ophthalmologist. So I went to see an ophthalmologist and discovered that I have a congenital disease called keratoconus. Now, basically what happens in keratoconus is the front of your eyes come out. And as that happens, the bulge forward, it displaces the lens. A bunch of goofy things happen to your eyes. And you can't see. So in 1973, this accident that I was in was April 1st, 1973. So after the accident, after I find out that I've got this problem with my eyes, and because I still have some reservations when I say what I'm about to say, and you know, it's all hung up with sexual identity issues too, I'm sure. But the disease that I have, other than addiction, mostly affects adolescent females, right? See, things have never been easy for me. But so that excited a great deal of curiosity and interest amongst the medical profession when I was diagnosed. And consequently, I was down here at UT having people look at me and do all of this stuff. And I got on a waiting list for transplants. Now, in 1973 and 74, transplant surgery today is a real simple thing. It basically is, you know, just sort of, it's almost like driving through McDonald's. At that time, it wasn't. And they were just beginning to learn how to preserve tissue, donor tissue. And you had to be ready for the tissue within 12 hours of it being harvested. I always liked that term, harvesting the tissue, which meant in my case that an FBI agent had gotten blown away down here in Knoxville, and they took the front of his eyes out and brought him up to Johnson City to stick in me, you know. And but the first time that they called me to tell me that they had, by this time I'm profoundly blind in my left eye legally blind in my right. And I really wanted to see. But I couldn't get clean. And they called and said, you need to come get your eyes. And I'm loaded and I can't go. You know? I did not view that as a miracle. I did not view that that accident as a miracle. And later on, when I tried as hard as I could to kick and could not, I collapsed in the middle of the bathroom floor one morning, and I'm throwing up blood because of an ulcer that perforated. So through no fault of my own, I ended up in the emergency room at Morristown-Hamlin Hospital, and they stabilized me, and they were able to keep me there and detox me long enough for me to go have the surgery on my eyes. I did not, at that time, think of that as a miracle. I thought it was a bad break. You know, I felt like that I was being zapped. But that's not what it was. It was God's way of doing for me what I could not do for myself. I didn't get here because I woke up one morning and decided that I wanted what the program had. I got here first. I got clean first so I could have the surgery. I stayed clean after the surgery because the doctor told me that if I shot crystal anymore, it would increase the interocular pressure, the pressure inside my eye, and the transplants would blow out. So I had this picture in my mind of shooting dope one day and watching my eyeballs fly across the room. So I didn't stay clean because I wanted to stay clean. I stayed clean because I didn't want my eyes popping out. Now, that's important for me because I hear people say, you can't get clean for anything other than wanting to be clean. Well, that's not my experience, you know. My experience was I stayed abstinent because I was scared not to. But I was able to stay abstinent long enough to want to be clean. No. And when I got clean, as I say, there were less than 1,000 people in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous, and none of them were in Upper East Tennessee. So I went to AA meetings for a long time. That's what we had, and that's what I did. I never felt like I belonged there. I stayed because I knew that I had no other place to go. There was nothing else. No. And then one Thursday night in Johnson City, Tennessee, there was an AA meeting on Watauga in a church. And I came into this meeting and I was the topic. And everybody went around and told me why I couldn't stay there. Or a lot of them told me why I couldn't stay there. And it came around to me, and I did something that I have continued to do on and off. Thank God I don't do as much now as I used to. If you scare me or hurt me, rather than me saying to you, I am scared and hurt, I turn that into anger. You know, and so these people go around and they come to me and I'm scared, I'm hurt, and I know that on my own there is no way that I'm going to do this. I know that I can't stay clean. So they, you know, come around to me, and basically I said to them, the only desire is a desire not to drink. And besides, none of you bastards are big enough to throw me out of here. In a burst of spirituality. And but something happened to me there. I had never felt quite like I belonged. There had always been this thing about you're not supposed to talk about this stuff. Now, I used alcohol. It was the first thing that I used. It was the first drug that I used. But once I found some other stuff, you know, I'm one of these people that like to orbit the sun. I do not understand, never have been able to understand people who would take things and not out. You know, I wanted to explore the galaxies. And I was scared, and I was hurt, and I didn't know what was going to happen to me. You know, on one hand, I knew that I'm going to go back, and we're going to, and I'm going to fight for my right to survive in here, but it's not going to be comfortable. I mean, I felt like that every time I walk into one of these meetings, I'm going to have to defend myself. I'm going to have to fight to be here. And something happened. I was at the time when I got clean. I had been thrown out of high school given the choice by a juvenile judge to go to reform school or to join the Navy, and I became intensely patriotic in the blink of an eye and went into the military. But I hadn't finished high school, and that was something that caused me a great deal of shame. I lied about that. You know. But so when I got into recovery, one of the things that I was able to do was go to school. So the first 5 years that I was clean, basically what I did was go to school full-time, work full-time, and go to meetings. That's what I did. And I didn't use. So I'm at East Tennessee State University, and they had just built the Student Center up there, the Student Union building. It was what I thought was an architectural monstrosity. But it turned out that the guy who designed it was NAA. He did. He later on, he got clean. The place was packed one morning, and I'm sitting at this table, and these two girls that I barely knew that I'd been in classes with came in and sat down, and one of them was talking about a boyfriend of hers who was in prison in California, incarcerated in California, and that some people had brought a meeting of some sort in there for people who had problems with drugs. And I didn't know these people real well, and so I think they were kind of uncomfortable that I had been listening to their conversation. But I asked her about that, and she wouldn't tell me who her boyfriend was, and I could understand that. But she told me what prison he was in. So I called this prison and got the chaplain's office and talked to them about this meeting, and he said, this chaplain said, oh, that's Narcotics Anonymous. They're in here, but they're down in Los Angeles. And he said, what you need to do, he says, I don't have a number for those people. What you're going to need to do is call information in Los Angeles and get a number. Well, I called, and it wasn't in Los Angeles, it was in Sun Valley, and I got a number. I called, and the phone, somebody picked up the phone and said, this is Narcotics Anonymous, my name is Jimmy. And we talked, and he says, He said, the closest NA to you is in Atlanta. Now, this is before Interstate 75 was completed. And some of you who lived up in the Upper East Tennessee know what an adventure it used to be going from Bristol, Kingsport, Johnson City to Atlanta before I-75 was completed. You know, there. So he said, so what you're going to have to do is start a meeting. And I thought to myself, this is, you know, how can I do that? I don't know anything. He said, I'm going to send you some pamphlets, get yourself a coffee pot in a room, and get a meeting started. And I did that. On May 17, 1977, at 116 Market Street in Kingsport, Tennessee, there was a meeting in Narcotics Anonymous. Now, the meeting did not last. No, it folded. And I went on. But we tried, and we got harassed big time by the Sullivan County Sheriff and by the Kingsport Police Department. And, you know, it was, and I finally went up to Bluntville, which was the county seat, and talked with the Superior Court judge up there, because in a lot of parole and probation agreements, there's that thing that says you can't associate with non-convicted felons, you know? That would violate your probation or your parole. I went up and talked to this judge about that and told him what we were trying to do, and he was okay with that. The sheriff's department never did get okay with us. You know, we would find this meeting that we had was in the offices of what was at that time the Upper East Tennessee Council on Alcoholism. It was right underneath one of the oldest AA meetings they'd started an AA meeting up there in that building in 1946, so it had been there a while. And we were right down underneath that. There was a print shop, there still is, I think, a print shop on one side of it, and then we were down the hallway, and there was a conference room on the left, and that's where we met. But we had trouble with undercover people coming in there and all kinds of things. So I met Ed, Motorcycle Ed. We moved the meeting out to a church out at Tri-City Airport. I met Ed, Motorcycle Ed. He came in. Ed's somebody with a great deal of faith. He had spent the last penny he had on a cab from Johnson City. He was working, putting glass in. They were building some Hardee's restaurant. He had spent the last penny he had on a cab out to that meeting. He wasn't sure where the meeting was. You know. So I met Ed up there. And in 1980, I moved to Atlanta. You know, the meeting folded because some people got interested in young people's AA, and, you know, and I left, and so the meeting just kind of folded. I did give a bunch of literature to an AA member named Ray. I can't remember Ray's. Ray's dead now, I could use his last name, but I can't remember what his last name was. And I understand from Sam that eventually that literature got passed on. That eventually an NA group in the Tri-Cities area got that literature. Wasn't much of it, but there was some. So I went to Atlanta. And I need to say this too. I guess in 79 there was a World Convention in Atlanta. And I went. There was, we were up here. There were three or four of us. It's hard getting people clean. There was a lot of hard for people to stay clean. There was a lot of folks telling us that you really just need to go to AA and substitute drugs for alcohol and all that sort of stuff. So, I went to Atlanta, and I remember was at the Biltmore Hotel. There are pictures of it upstairs on the second floor. I went into the Biltmore Hotel, and what you did was you went in on the ground level, and you walked up these steps, and there was this open lobby. And I walked, this was in September of 79, and I walked up those steps and walked out in there, and here are all of these people. And they're all addicts, and 95% of them anyway were clean. Yeah. I knew that I was not alone. I knew that I was not alone. So, it's been my good fortune to be actively involved in Narcotics Anonymous in all levels of service. And I want to say this too. This may sound like heresy, but I'm just real sorry. If you don't have a personal recovery program, personal program of recovery, you have got no damn business doing service. You know it? Get yourself into recovery. Get an understanding of the steps of the program Narcotics Anonymous and the principles that are embodied in those steps before people go out inflicting their disease on others. Yeah. Now, that's not to say that I think that you should complete the 12 steps and have an understanding of the 12 concepts and 12 traditions and be able to recite the first 115 pages of the basic text. But what it then means is it gets some sense of the fact that we are powerless over the disease of addiction and our lives is unmanageable or unmanageable, and it's only by God's grace, a power greater than ourselves, that we are clean today. Year before last, the convention is back in Atlanta. The World Convention of Narcotics Anonymous 29 is in Atlanta, Georgia. And I became part of the support committee. We're actively involved in the convention. And on Thursday night that the convention opened, we're in this room, and there are probably 10,000 people in that room. You know? And I had been asked to open that convention, and that just blew me away. I have not yet been able to figure out how that happened there, because there, in my view, and it's not just a view, it is a fact, there are a lot more people that speak with more eloquence than I do. There are a lot more people who have made greater sacrifices and service in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous than I have, and a lot of those people were in Atlanta at that convention. And so there were people that were far better qualified to open that convention than I was. But they asked me to do that. And I stood up there and I looked out at all of those faces. And I thought about how it felt being thrown out of that meeting. I thought about the people that I had known in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous who had worked so hard. I thought about all the effort that all of those people put into getting the book written. Talk about a miracle. The Narcotics Anonymous basic text and the way it came to be was a miracle. And I moved to Atlanta just when a lot of the stuff was going on with that book, a lot of the writing of that book was going on, and we used to do some of the writing at the Rising Sun Clubhouse, a lot of it, as a matter of fact. But I was just overwhelmed with the miracle that Narcotics Anonymous is and will continue to be. All of those people cling. All of those people in Atlanta. I think that may have been, somebody asked me this yesterday. We were setting up a history workshop, and somebody asked me about important things that had happened in NA that I, you know, magic moments in Narcotics Anonymous, I think is what he said. And I was thinking about that. What is it? And that was one of them, being a part of that. But being clean in the fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous is the most important miracle in my life. Now, I have developed a relationship with God as I understand God. That is the most profound and the most important thing in my life. And you gave me that. The gift of a God of my understanding is something that was given to me in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. Because when I got clean, I had lost a child. And this little girl was just the apple of my eye. And I was really hacked off at God because I figured God killed my kid. And people would say things like, oh, it's a loving God, and blah, blah. And I would think to myself, you sorry, blah. No. I had a real problem with that. I had a real problem with coming. I didn't have a problem with coming to believe in a fellowship that was a power greater than myself, but I had a lot of trouble coming to find a relationship with God as I understand God. You folks gave me that. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful. And I'm grateful for the opportunity to be a part of this workshop and to be a part of this convention. It's really great to come to Tennessee, and it was really and look at a meeting schedule and see that there are NA meetings in Johnson City, Kingsport, Bristol, Abingdon, Virginia. Because I remember when there weren't any. I remember when there weren't any. Thank you.